Well, this is kind of weird, isn't it? We're sitting here behind microphones, whereas normally when we're having conversations like this, we're sitting behind a pint in a pub. But we've talked forever about doing this because we thought it might be vaguely useful. We hope it might be vaguely useful, sharing some of the stories and experiences that we've both gone through. And they're quite different ones, but there's many things that tally and join up in the middle. And I suppose we should do that awful thing where we introduce ourselves. You know, when we used to work in offices and you had to go around the table at the beginning of a meeting and say who you are and why you're there, we probably have to vaguely do that ourselves. And I need to make you start.
These conversations started over lunch. We thought it would be really good to share these stories that we found just actually quite funny at times. Also, you know, deep conversation about the intricacies of living with cancer. But yes, it was usually over lunch and definitely not with a microphone in my face.
So. Although we actually met on Instagram, because you sent me a message on Instagram. And when I first saw it, I thought, well, I don't know that person. Why would I talk to them about what I'm going through? And then I met you in the pub and I thought, oh, I do want to talk to that person because she's really lovely. And then we became friends via that. But why don't you sort of say what your story is? I sort of used to hate the word journey because everyone uses the word journey. But after a year and a half, 2 years of going through this, I sort of succumbed to the word journey because it kind of does sum up what one goes through. And I haven't thought of a better word, but what's your journey been so far, Sarah?
I think journey is a great word actually for me, particularly because as we sit here today, this is now 2.5 years since my journey began, since, in all honesty, my life was tipped upside down in a moment. It literally is a moment, that moment that you, for me particularly, find a lump. And
is that how it started? You literally found a lump in your breast?
Literally found a lump almost under my arm. I had a funny little pain in my arm and I had a lump and I thought, gosh, what can that be? But immediately go to the worst case scenario. I think that's a natural human reaction, although not everybody does. And some people don't immediately go and see a doctor. But I was in panic mode from the moment I found it. And I must say the NHS have been exceptional in regards to that, in terms of their assistance with getting things through quite quickly.
Did you see a GP initially?
I didn't even see a GP, so I rang the GP and he said, just due to my age and what I was describing, he was quite happy to refer me straight away down to the breast clinic.
And that was where, because we should say we both live in Cumbria in the Lake District.
That's right. So this is Morecambe Bay Health Trust, and my GP is in Windermere, but the breast clinic itself is in Lancaster. So I'll try not to give, you know, war and peace on this, but essentially, yes, I had a visit to the breast clinic, didn't really think it was anything. I actually went on my own, not recommended. That's my first tip, is no matter what the appointment, do take somebody with you, because you just don't know. Actually, sharing in good and the bad news, it's actually good to have somebody, if you can, with you.
And you don't know, and also you don't remember everything you're told.
Of course you don't know.
That cliche is true, it does go by in a blur.
Absolutely not. So they did a biopsy, but unfortunately off the initial ultrasound, that they were pretty sure that it was cancer just because of the shape of the tumour. So they did some nasty biopsies and off that went. But already the wheels were in motion, I think, for a treatment plan.
So it's quite quick.
They have been exceptional. I know that's not everybody's experience, but I have advocated for myself along the way, really pushed for answers quickly. And again, I know that not everybody is probably quite as forward as me in that regard, but I found that to be quite helpful for me, being a bit of a control freak, I suppose. I wanted to always know what was happening and when it was going to happen, by when I was to expect answers.
So how long was the period from you going to see the clinic and having a biopsy?
I had the biopsy on the same day.
Oh, wow.
Okay. They do it on the same day. Brilliant. So they sort of have an initial investigation with breast, or certainly this is my experience, and then they do the ultrasound and biopsy then. They then have a 2-week window in which to get back to you with those results. But my team were back to me, I think, within about 8 days, I think it was. And in all honesty, from the minute I found the lump to the day that I started my first chemotherapy, it was, I think it was just over 3.5 weeks.
Wow. So
incredible.
Straight from diagnosis to chemo, that was your first treatment?
My first treatment was chemo. I have a breast cancer called triple negative, which is one of the more complex ones to treat because it is not reactive to hormones. However, yeah, they got on with it. And so I had the original treatment plan was chemotherapy and then some surgery and then some radiotherapy as well. And I did all of that over around about an 8 to 9 month period.
And at this stage, did they tell you, I mean, obviously all cancer is serious, but did they tell you what the prognosis, did you have any idea?
Yeah, the prognosis was great. Okay. Totally curable.
Yeah.
And despite the fact that it was one of what they consider to be a slightly faster growing cancer, and I also I have something which some people may be familiar with, which is a BRCA1 mutation. So everybody has got a BRCA1 gene, and that actually stops you from getting breast and ovarian cancer, or certainly lowers your risk. Whereas my gene is mutated, so it means that I had a much higher propensity of getting breast cancer anyway. And as a result of that, I think I've had lots of tests and various other things. I've also now had something called whole genomic sequencing, because we're trying to work out what treatments might be coming down the line, and that's the most exciting part. But we'll talk about that in a later episode.
Of course.
So yeah, that was the first tranche of this, and actually I can't exactly remember the date, but around 9 to 10 months later I rang the bell at radiotherapy. I'd had at that point over 6 months of chemo. I'd had a double mastectomy and full reconstruction. And then I'd also had 3 weeks of daily radiotherapy, and rang the bell and we were good to go.
So when you say good to go, they said you're clear of cancer.
Nobody ever actually said those words.
Yeah.
Exactly. But there was no evidence of disease on any scans or anything that anybody could determine. So it was kind of off I went. And unfortunately, around about, I remember it vividly, it was January.
So how long after you rang the bell?
So I rang the bell on the 29th of June.
Okay.
I think it was. That's now 2020. I'm trying to get all the dates right. 2022. And on the 5th of January 2023, unfortunately, I found a tiny lump in my neck. And it was on the same side as my original cancer. So unfortunately, it immediately, you know, you worry. And again, they were amazing. I rang up and they saw me within literally days. And yeah, the story was that it was cancer. They did, again, another biopsy. But we kind of knew the story. So the treatment was already booked in. And again, that was another fairly intensive round of a different type of chemotherapy this time. And it's mad. I had no idea there were so many different types of chemotherapy. Like, it's crazy, Jeremy. You know, I don't know the exact number now, but even when I started, I remember the team telling me there's something like 250 plus different types of chemotherapy.
God, that's insane.
They're all doing something slightly different. So,
and was the cancer that was found in your neck, is that still classified as breast cancer?
It is breast cancer, yeah. So, and unfortunately then that means that a word that nobody ever wants to hear is that it's metastatic, which means, you know, it's off floating around your body, unfortunately. And now it was still sort of fairly localized. So there was a few question marks about whether we might have still contained it and whether we might be able to do something about that. So again, another round of chemo and then some more radiotherapy again on a slightly different area. And again, then I came out of that, rang the bell, albeit not quite as enthusiastically, I'll be honest. And that was May 2023. And then I had a change of implant, which took out an implant that I'd had, which is actually called a
breast implant.
Yeah, so I had something called a tissue expander so that I could have lots of radiotherapy on that side. Mm-hmm. But the tissue expanders, for anybody who needs a bit more knowledge, usually, mine did, have a magnetic port in it. And that means that you can't have an MRI. Yeah, it's interesting. So anyway, once we swapped that out for a silicon implant, which I was very glad about, because actually, and here's a comedy part for everybody, I had one quite nice silicon shaped implant, and then I had another one that looked like a stuck on 1970s type style. It was so weird because it was such a funny, I found it funny. I look, I know it's not funny to everyone, it's
you
very
have
serious
to find the
but,
humor in
but
the
that
faces,
exactly
yeah.
So that was that, and then they wanted to give me an MRI because they could, so I had an MRI, and unfortunately then we found that there was a mass in my liver that was growing quickly. So from a CT scan to an MRI, 3.5 weeks gap, and it had grown significantly. They're in centimeters.
Really?
Yeah.
But you still, if I'm correct, couldn't feel anything. There was no pain. You didn't feel as if you had a cancer. It was just the treatment that was making you feel.
In that regard, I think I've been very, very lucky in that I didn't have really any symptoms ever.
It must have been so weird that this cancer had spread to two different places, and yet you wouldn't have known if someone hadn't told you, or you'd.
It really is still weird to this day, and we'll come on to this again. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure I feel ill even now.
No, you look great.
And I had treatment yesterday.
I know.
So it's one of them. But
so they found the
liver. Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. And then we really were, this is not good. Yeah. So now we use phrases like, this is treatable, but incurable, which I had a very, very rough.
That's a
month.
Really tough thing to hear. And why is it incurable? Why can't it be cured?
I wish I knew the answer to that.
Just some can, some can't.
I'm resilient in most areas of my life. Turns out my nasty cancer cells are also resilient little buggers. However, having said that, again, I'm on a targeted treatment now, targeted therapy, and I have been for quite a number of months, and I am living my life to the absolute max.
You certainly are.
There are good days and bad days, let's be honest. My latest scans showed that it was working, and in fact it had shrunk the mass in my liver. I'm looking after myself, but I'm also enjoying myself. I've gone through a variety of different journeys with nutrition and off-the-shelf medications, and all approved by my oncologist, I should say, off-the-shelf medications and supplements. And I think I've found, touch wood, a happy balance of really caring for myself, but also understanding that a little bit of what you fancy for me also helps me mentally. Mm. And I've had some amazing care and met some amazing people on this journey.
I mean, you really have had a journey, and that's such an extraordinary tough at times, most of the time, journey in such a short time. So much has happened to you and your body and your mind since that first diagnosis. It's quite extraordinary.
Well, thank you for saying. And I think I'd like to add that in a way, I think I'm a better person for it, unbelievably, which is something I think we'll explore. Anyway.
And it's a weird thing. There are positives that come out of this, aren't they? Which we'll look at more. But there are. And it's hard to sometimes believe that, particularly perhaps when you're first diagnosed, re-diagnosed in your case. But one can find chinks of light in the darkness and live in those chinks.
For sure. So anyway, enough about me. I think that it's about time that we heard from you, Jeremy, and a little bit about your story, journey, or how on earth you've come to be sat here in a room talking to me.
I ask myself that a lot, Sarah. I hate this bit. Well, I was diagnosed. Well, I went to see a doctor, did my normal annual checkup, and my GP cleverly did a PSA test, which is how people measure whether you have any signs of prostate cancer. But, you know, it was just a normal test. No one expected anything back, but it came back with a PSA test that was slightly raised, higher than my normal PSA. But it wasn't that high. But thank God my GP was very observant and just thought, let's just do another test to see. So he did another one, and it was also high. So then I went off and did an MRI scan, and then it came back that it looked like there was a tumour on my prostate. And then I did a biopsy, and sadly, I did have an aggressive high-grade cancer. And a bit like you, Sarah, I had no symptoms, no idea, not a clue. I did not feel ill or remotely anything. I'd even get up to go for a wee in the night. You know, sometimes men have an enlarged prostate as they get older. I'm 58. I didn't even have that. But there we go. I had it. And because of its aggressiveness, and it was a five plus four, it's Gleason score, which is how they measure prostate cancer, that they wanted to get rid of it quite quickly. So it was suggested that I had a radical prostatectomy, which is where basically they cut out your prostate, and they use this amazing computer gimmick. Basically, it's a robotic surgery. So four or five different metal arms dig down through your stomach, down to your prostate, and cut the prostate from around the bladder and all those private areas. And amazingly, one little robot arm puts your prostate into a basically like a carrier bag to bring it out of the body so that it doesn't spread the cancer anywhere. It's most extraordinary. You can watch it, not mine, but you can watch how surgery like looks like on YouTube. So I had that, and they had to cut out quite a few lymph nodes because of the aggressiveness and size of the cancer. And then I hoped that would be that. And then they tested my PSA again 6 weeks after the operation, and there was nothing there. And they did it again a few weeks later, nothing there. And then yay, I was cancer-free. So that was very exciting. Although, you know, when you just have a sneaking suspicion, there was no reason to have a sneaking suspicion, but I had one. And lo and behold, 12 weeks later, the cancer had come back. So then we had to go down a different route. So I've been, still am, on hormone therapy, which we'll talk about later. Neither of us have enjoyed that experience. I would say it's my least favourite of the process so far. And then last October, this all started about 2 years ago, and then last October, almost a year after the operation, I did a 66 doses of radiotherapy over 33 days, which was actually fine, which is what it is. I quite like the people in the hospital. It was nice to see them every day, if I'm honest. And I'm on hormone therapy until June 2025. And the weird thing is, I haven't a clue what's going on, because while you're on hormone therapy, it masks the cancer. The hormone therapy blocks testosterone, and testosterone is what feeds the cancer. So it's a little like a form of chemical castration, and it gives you the symptoms of the menopause. So I now, you know, can understand and sympathize with so many women who have to go through this, because I have so many symptoms that menopausal women have. So that is where I am. So I don't know if I'm riddled with cancer or if they've more or less got rid of it, and I haven't a clue. But luckily, I have a short attention span, and so it doesn't occupy too much of my mind too much of the time, except when we're recording podcasts like this.
Well, that was much more succinct than mine, and it's just a journey. Just quickly, whilst we're on this, in terms of your feeling about, I know we're going to talk in a different episode around diagnosis, but yeah. When it comes back, how did you?
Well, I mean, yeah, it can be sort of devastating, but I think my defense system was not to believe it had gone.
Right.
Because I remember when I was told that it had gone, and my sister, who was with me at the appointment, you know, burst into tears. My husband was thrilled. And I remember, you know, when everyone's celebrating and you don't feel the celebration yourself, you feel a bit like a fake. Because I just thought, I'm not convinced this is going to be the case. So it wasn't a horrible shock. And I think, I'm not a pessimistic person, but I'm maybe cynical or maybe just realistic or pragmatic. I just thought, is it high-grade aggressive cancer going to be gone that easily? And it turns out it hadn't. But it wasn't a devastating shock. And we've talked about this before. I think a lot of things with having cancer, you know, you have highs and lows, and there are low points. Sometimes you feel angry and confused. But I sort of just decided that I wasn't going to let cancer affect me in that way. And you could say that's easy for me because no one said I've got a terminal cancer, or, you know, I don't know how bad it is yet, so I'm not having to deal with the worst that it could be. But I just thought, this is my journey, and I'm going to be on it, and it is what it is, and I'm going to look upon cancer as a kerfuffle and not a disease. So you could call me absolutely idiotic for that approach, but it's as you talked about in the intro, everyone has a different experience, and we all have different ways of dealing with it, and none of them are wrong. It's just your way of doing it. And you, I mean, you have highs and lows. We've talked about it.
Absolutely. And I think the reason I asked you that question was very much around, it is highs and lows, but also the other important thing that we wanted to mention, and we will, again, all of these things that we're talking about in this first episode, we're going to explore in much more detail in our other episodes, and we'll tell you about what those episodes are in a moment. But there's so many different moving parts, isn't there? There's that idea of, okay, the diagnosis and what we as individuals are going through. But there's also then the impact. You mentioned your sister and your husband were there. It's who is within this journey as well with you. And there's sort of people who are very closely impacted. Mm-hmm. And then there are people who are slightly more indirectly impacted, but still impacted, you know, work colleagues and people who just generally know you, your friends. It really does spread out into
and work, of course. You know, it affects so many people, and there's so much you don't know. I mean, I didn't even really know where my prostate was or what it did. I'd never heard of a PSA test, even though apparently I'd had them for the last few years. So, you know, we're quite blissfully ignorant about so many of these things, and that's one of the reasons we both want to do this podcast, is to help other people in our situations, to help other people who are dealing with others in these situations, and to take away the mystique. I mean, cancer's a horrible thing, but you know, the stats are that one in two people will get cancer or know someone with cancer. So we all have to face different aspects of it. And so we just wanted to make that a little bit easier. And do you know what? I remember when I was 32, a friend of mine got cancer. It was the first time I knew someone, a good friend who had cancer, Ruth Picardy, and she's a godmother to one of my sons. And I remember being immature and not really knowing how to talk to her about it. And I can remember once, probably towards the end of her life, and we dropped our kids off at the park and we were walking to the car, and I said, "Oh, Ruth, how are you feeling?" And Ruth slightly snapped back in understandable way, saying, "Well, physically or mentally?" And I thought, "Oh God, I've really said the wrong thing." And I sort of I became all embarrassed and stuttered. And I just wasn't mature enough or gripped with enough chutzpah or information to be able to talk to her properly about her cancer, and I just don't want other people to have to feel awkward about talking to you or I or anyone else in that situation now. And that's one of the things we want to achieve with this podcast, isn't it? Take away the taboo and take away the scary bits about asking or talking about cancer.
Yeah, 100% for sure. And also, you know, that's why we called it "How Long Have You Got?" Now, let's be realistic. We're all in this situation that not a single one of us have got a clue. And if we can all think about that in the first instance and then sort of use that as the baseline and take it from there, I think there's a lot more that can be done. Now, I have another very pertinent question, and I actually don't even know the answer to this because we haven't talked about it on one of our lunches. Did you actually watch the YouTube video of the prostate exam before, after, or ever?
I watched it before. Everyone said don't watch it, but I'm just really nosy. You know, I'm sort of trained as a journalist, so maybe that talks into my. But I had to. And also a bit of a control freak, so I had to know what was going to happen to my body. And I didn't find it that alarming. I found it quite fascinating, really. It just seems so abstract when you see bits of robot go all the way down into your body. And I wanted to know. It's because my operation was actually delayed a week, and it was my operation was meant to be on the day of the Queen's funeral, and there weren't allowed to be operations on that day. People wouldn't be able to cross London if something went wrong, and surgeons or doctors wouldn't be able to access a hospital quickly. So it was postponed for a week, and it was in that week. Well, it was, first of all, slightly weird watching the world's biggest funeral when you're about to go into an operation on the cancer in your prostate. Sort of kind of weird, because I think, well, my funeral won't be that big or special, so that would be annoying. But it also gave me longer to think about it, and that's when I did dip into the YouTube video about the radical prostatectomy. But the fact that the surgeon sits at one end of the room with levers as if he's playing, you know, PlayStation, and the robot arms against your stomach at the other end of the room, it's really bizarre. So you sort of have to see it to believe it.
Well, and this is another core point, I think, is that science is incredible and the speed at which everything is improving. I know, you know, that there's, for me personally, there's an element of realism with any chronic illness diagnosis, but there's also got to be an element of hope. The treatment that I'm on now wasn't even in existence a year ago, so that's really exciting stuff. And who knows what's going to be down the line, you know?
I mean, and you don't know. And you know, we called it, as you said, "How long have you got?" Because it's sort of the question that crosses your mind when you're given a diagnosis, and it's the question that probably crosses the mind of lots of people, you know. Although they won't ask you that directly. And sometimes you don't even really ask yourself that directly. But the thing is, nobody knows. As you said, Sarah, treatments are changing all the time. Even the cancer can change in different directions all the time. And actually, every person asks their surgeon or doctor, "How long have they got?" And they can't answer, because all they can answer really is on the statistic or an average. No one really knows. So,
and the one thing I think I've learned along this journey is that actually cancer isn't average. It really isn't. It totally and utterly depends on the environment in which it's trying to exist in. Mm. And that depends on the person and their maybe underlying health conditions, or, I'm going to say it, nutrition and what they do to the body, but also their mental state of mind. There's so many moving parts. Yeah. Age is a huge thing. Mutations of genes, you know, there's so many moving parts. And that's why we came at this podcast very much in the fact that we can't give expert advice. We're not experts. But what we can share is our experiences and also hopefully some helpful tips. And that brings me on to the next point that I really wanted to make in this sort of introductory episode. And that is very much around the fact that, I don't know about you, but what about the portrayal of cancer in two ways? Right. One, like mainstream media, which you know much more about than me, but also every single TV and film that does it, you know, everybody's got no hair, yeah. Everybody looks really poorly, that, you know, it's almost, and I'm going to say it, a bit of a victim thing. Mm-hmm. And again, I keep saying everybody wants to be treated differently. But for me, the last thing I want is to be treated as a victim.
Yeah.
Far from it. I want to be treated like a normal 38-year-old.
You're so right. And we both noticed when you're diagnosed with cancer, and you don't really think about cancer, and you're not diagnosed with it, you don't have it. And then it's a bit like if you buy a blue car and suddenly everyone else has a blue car. And it's a bit like when you get cancer and you watch TV, every single film or TV show where the person is ill or is going to die, it's always cancer. And I was thinking, bloody hell, can't you come up with a different disease for the character? There are other illnesses, you know. But it is, cancer is portrayed as the bogeyman, and with good reason, but it is always the grim reaper's only around the corner, which isn't always the case. So we wanted to normalize cancer a bit with this podcast, didn't we? It happens. Also, people get ill and people die. All of us die at some point. So we just want to slightly normalize that journey and phraseology, and, you know, shit happens. Can we say that? I don't know.
You just did.
Beep.
You can't do your own beeps. I could try and beep over you. No, it very, very important point, I think, is that I hear stories constantly of people living long and very fulfilled lives for years and years with cancer. Mm. It can be sometimes, depending on your cancer, mm-hmm. managed long term.
Yeah.
And that's the hopeful side. And you're right, yeah, people die. But we talk about this, Jeremy, you and I, a lot.
We do.
That we could get run over.
We could say, oh, that's great, we're feeling okay, and boom, a car hits
exactly.
you to get out of the studio.
So
you never know. But also, we do recognise that, you know, Sarah has breast cancer and I have prostate cancer, and there are many other cancers. So we're looking at a small example of the many cancers. So breast cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer and bowel cancer, the four most common types of cancer. But we will bring experts in for some episodes when needs be, and we will bring people in who've had other experiences. And also, as we said in the intro, it's really, really important that people get in touch with us on Instagram and message us about topics you'd like us to cover, things you think we should mention, experts you think we should talk to, because this really isn't, don't want it to be just about us, I don't often say that, but we want it to be about you and everyone else too. This really is meant to be about, you know, us as in a group, whoever is listening to us kindly. So please do get in touch with us, and we will read everything, answer as much as we can. And I must point out that when, God, over a year ago now, I wrote a big piece for the Sunday Times magazine about my experience of cancer. And it was the cover story, which is quite spooky. It'd be lovely to be on the cover of a magazine because I was an actor or because I was a model. But I was on the cover of a magazine because I had cancer. But hey-ho, I got the cover. But so many men, hundreds and hundreds of men I'd never met, wrote to me about their experiences, either with themselves or people they knew. And I felt really, really flattered and honoured that they shared these really intimate stories with me. Some were so sad and some were hopeful and some were useful. But so many men messaged me because it was anonymous. And men in particular, I don't know if it's the same with women and breast cancer, but so many men don't really talk about these things. And that's why I wanted to slightly bring it about in the open. And we'll go into this in more detail, but prostate cancer can affect your sex life. It can affect whether you can urinate properly. There's so many side effects that go with this. They're almost worse than the cancer itself. So men don't often talk about it because they're embarrassed. But I'm not embarrassed. And I do want to talk about these things and address the issues in a separate episode, particularly as so many men don't talk about these things. And I got so many messages, mostly through DMs on Instagram or LinkedIn, which I thought was very, very indicative there. It was lots of middle-aged businessmen who probably have or dealing with prostate cancer, and thus that was the platform they used to get in touch. So please do use us, and we have set up an Instagram account, so it makes it easy for you to message us and leave comments. How long have you got 2024? Please say anything you think we could do better, things we could not do at all, and things we could add to, and it'd be really, really useful for us and for others.
I'm just hoping we get to season two, which is how long have you got 2025.
I know, fingers crossed.
Yeah. But we have a number of episodes planned, and I think it's important to say we're going to cover things like the waiting for results and diagnosis, and you've touched on that treatment and side effects.
Yeah.
We've actually both experienced one of the same drugs that was non-related to, well, in fact, yours is treating a cancer. Mine was to actually, ironically, protect my ovaries. However, it was in both cases the same drug and hideous, hideous things. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to touch on relationships. I think that's a huge one, complex to say the least.
That's not friends, family, lovers, dating, sex, the whole gamut.
We are going there. And it's going to be, again, it's just so complex. It all is. But then there's also other things. We're both working at the moment, as well as doing things like this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I feel very lucky that I'm still able to work. But there's so many hidden costs. Yeah. And how do you, you know, where do you get the support and the money? And we're definitely going to be speaking, I think, to Matt Millen, who's been lovely so far when we've told them what we're doing. Yeah. And then, you know, lifestyle choices, alternative medicines. We know we've got to be careful when we chat about that. But there are some really interesting thoughts around that. And it, again, we're going to hopefully touch on that. And then I think, you know, we're going to talk about life, living. Yeah. What does that look like? Do you have a bucket list? You know, is it a cliche to have a bucket list? I've been like Judith Chalmers, if anybody, you know, sorry if you're...
You're on a plane every other week.
Yes. Absolutely. But then there's links to that, like getting insured and risks and how your whole team has to be behind you. And yeah, and then, you know, we'll have to get heavy at some point and talk about the ultimate thing that's going to happen to all of us. Mm-hmm. Sorry to say it, everybody. Sorry if that's a shock to anybody. But cancer or no cancer, there's one thing that is for sure in this world, and that is it's going to end at some point.
That is true. I mean, the cruel thing, it happens to some people far too early. And you shouldn't be going through this at your age of 38. You are young to be facing all this. I'm old and 58, so I think it's easier for me. But that's something we'll look at too.
You're right. But then I also sometimes think about people going through childhood cancers. And,
oh God, yeah.
And again, you know, there is never a right age to be going through this. It doesn't matter your age, my age, childhood. There is no right age. No, it's disgusting.
All cancer is cancer. And, you know, sometimes when Sarah and I talk, I feel lucky because, you know, so far mine seems easier than what Sarah's going through. But then Sarah kindly said to me, but actually no one's easier. We're all going through it. How difficult it is, how far you're in that journey, how deep you are into it is almost irrelevant. You still are having to deal with cancer. So no one's journey should be underestimated. No one's suffering should be devalued. We're all going through this.
I think that's a really important point. And you touched on it just before as well, around the idea of your friend Ruth, was it?
Yeah,
Ruth. Yeah. And that, how are you feeling physically and how are you feeling mentally? And I've answered that question quite a few times to my friends. Will ask me how I'm feeling, and I'll actually give a rating out of 10. So I'll say, you know, mentally 6, but physically 9. And then I think actually that's interesting because they then know how to talk to me beyond that. And that's something my friends and I have got going over time. And so they know now how that goes. And then the following questions are kind of related to that.
I think it's really important, even though, you know, you're perhaps the one going through it, it's really important you make other people feel comfortable with it. They don't have cancer, but it's still really tough for them. So you have to make the journey easier for them too. And it's hard because at the beginning, I remember, you know, you get inundated with questions, don't you? When you're first diagnosed, everyone's kindly asking, what's happening? What's the prognosis? What's the treatment? When are you going to deal? Da, da, da. And even though it's so lovely that they're asking all those questions, I got overwhelmed by the amount of questions to answer. And also people, again, and coming from a good place, expect quite detailed answers. I remember, and someone, a friend of mine who was suffering from breast cancer at the time, she said, cut and paste is your best friend, Gerald. And she was so right. I just cut and paste all the answers and it made life so much easier. So that's why we'll also be looking at some of the simple tips that just make your life that bit easier, even if it's just cut and paste, or actually you can have a glass of wine or a, you know, a chocolate, whatever it is.
Well, on that note, I'm hoping that this has given everybody a really good introduction to us.
And please do get in touch. As Sarah said, the Instagram handle is...
How long have you got? 2024. With the 2024 obviously being numerical. But we'll share it in the show notes that you should be able to get. And not me, but Jeremy may well be on the cover of another magazine. So we'll see.
Well, who knows? Thank you very much for listening, and we will speak to you soon.
Thank you.